Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Players, exclusively available for Arseblog members on Patreon, a series of podcasts in which we look back at some of the greatest players in Arsenal's history. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by the one and only Philippe Auclair. Philippe, hi there.
Good afternoon to you.
And we are going to be discussing probably my favourite Arsenal player of all time, a certain Mr. Robert Pires, a man who I'm sure you have great affection for too, as do all of our listeners.
I have great affection for the player, and I've got great affection for the man as well.
Yes.
I don't know whom I prefer, if it's the player or the man, which should tell you something about how good the man is.
Absolutely. That's a really interesting thing that you said there, because part of my notes here is like Pires the player and then Pires the person. And we might come to Pires the person in a little bit, but Pires the player joined Arsenal in the year summer of 2000, ostensibly as a replacement for Mark Overmars. But... you know, Arsenal had gone 2 years without winning the title. They'd finished runner-up in the previous two seasons. Overmars and Petit, who had been instrumental in the first title that Arsene Wenger won, the double, I think it's fair to say that they were no longer quite as influential or perhaps interested. That's a debate perhaps for another time. But
yes.
There was a concerted effort on Arsenal's part that summer to address some of the failings, because if the 99 runner-up position was quite close in 2000, it wasn't quite as close. There was a gap opening up. So Arsenal went out and spent club record fee on Sylvain Wiltord that summer. Lauren came in from Real Mallorca. Edu from Brazil, although his delay, of course, was delayed, or his arrival, I should say, was delayed because of the passport issues. And Robert Pires came from Marseille for £6 million. So there was a real investment in the squad in that summer. And Pires, given a big responsibility, because however it went for Overmars, he was a big contributor to the way that the team played.
Yes, and he was a completely and is a completely different player to Mark Overmars in terms of his speed.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, with his strange duck feet, he still managed to go at a fair pace, at a fair lick. Did you know, by the way, that was the title of his French autobiography? His duck feet, mes pieds de canard.
Oh, really?
He absolutely. And because I think when he arrived, people were very surprised. I think Tony Adams was one of those who said, this guy doesn't look like a football player. That's absolutely, you know, it's just, the way he runs is just wrong. Yeah. I remember as well talking to Martin Keown in the first season that Bobby arrived at Arsenal. And when he was started actually to make him place for himself and a name for himself, because as we will probably say and talk about, his beginnings in the game, in the English game, were quite difficult. But he said that he realized that he was a super footballer. But again, he insisted on the very strange way that he ran with his feet, yes, exactly like Donald Duck. but moving at a fair, you know, at an incredible pace. And so he was very different from Mark Overmars indeed. He didn't have quite the same, he didn't rely on his speed as much. He was not quite the same kind of goal scorer as well as Mark Overmars was. But what he had, and which we came to discover after, again, a few months when I think we were all scratching our heads wondering how a guy whom some in France had thought was a bit too fragile for top-level football. And once he found his marks, then we realized we had a super player of a kind, of a very unusual kind.
Mm.
What is Pires' position? Is he a Pires? I mean, is there a position called a Pires? I
there
mean, is he a
be.
Winger? Well, yeah, because people talk about the Makelele role. Well, what about the Pires role?
Because you're right, because he's not a traditional winger. He's not really a number 10, although that is something that you would imagine is or certainly was within his wheelhouse, because I think later in his career he played a bit there for Villarreal, didn't he?
That's correct. You know, he couldn't run that fast.
Exactly, yeah, where they, you know, they just gave him the ball.
So they had Riquelme, then they had Pires. Yeah. That was part of a tradition at Villarreal.
You know, and he's not a support striker, but clearly a man who scores a lot of goals. So when you try and think about players who are like Robert Pires, there are very few out there, and I think that's a great point, the Pires role.
He could play both flanks as well, yeah. And I think perhaps it was a kind of inside forward, maybe, I don't know, or what Wenger called a non-axial playmaker,
right.
Somebody who had, I remember actually Wenger describing Pires at the beginning, saying he does three things wonderfully well. First of all, he passes the ball, or he does two things fantastically well. He said he passes the ball to a teammate, and he always passes the ball forward. And in Wenger ball, I mean, this is about as good as you can get. And with the quality as well, I mean, his right foot. I mean, we all have our favorite Robert Pires goals, in which he showed, you know, this amazing capacity he had to bend the ball. But far more than that, and his understanding of space, and also how he brought the game to life and was really perhaps, I don't know if you would agree, in that wonderful 2001-2002 season where Arsenal played some of the best football our club has ever played, he was genuinely the catalyst for the quality of the game. I mean, he was the player of the year that year, the footballer of the year that year.
We're getting ahead of ourselves here a bit, though. You know, I want to just ask you. No, that's fine. You know, I'm happy to relive these memories over and over. But I just wanted to ask you, because he'd started his career at Metz and then gone to Marseille. And at Metz, I think his scoring record was pretty good, 45, 50 goals in 150-odd appearances. And Marseille, not quite as good. It was a difficult period maybe for Marseille as a club, I think. There was some issues there around that time. And I do remember a brilliant goal he scored against Chelsea in the Champions League, maybe the season before, from an extremely tight angle. He just whacked it past. It could have been De Hoy who was in goal. An amazing goal. But when he came to Arsenal, what were, you know, your expectations, having been much more aware of him as a footballer than I would have been, you know, because of your knowledge of Liga? He wasn't a player who had been on my radar, and I think there was at that time a very implicit trust in the signings that Arsene Wenger made from France. We just went, here comes another one. But, you know, what were you expecting him to be ultimately as successful as he was?
I had my doubts, not about his talent as a footballer, because that was obvious to everyone, but perhaps because I was wondering if mentally speaking he would be tough enough. He'd gone through a very, very hard time at Marseille, and the reason why things didn't really quite click as they should have at the time is that he was going through some pretty complicated times, shall we say, off the field. And also, the Marseille supporters are absolutely implacable, if that's an English word, and I believe it is.
It is.
They didn't recognize in him a Marseille player. They want a certain amount of, I don't know, arrogance about their players. They want a kind of, I'm here, I'm the boss, sort of, you know, breathing in big chest, I'm here, I'm a Marseille player. You know, and he's not like that at all. And he had all these off-the-field issues, which, by the way, were purely of a personal basis, nothing to, you know, as would happen to anybody in any walk of life. And it really had an impact on his performances with Marseille. It also had an impact on the relationship he had with the Marseille fan, who, again, are not very forgiving. And because of that, he found himself outside of the team. And you wondered, right, I mean, he's still a very young man at the time. Is he going to be able to go above that? Could we have, perhaps, though he's a very different character, a player who will, by leaving France, discover himself, like, say, Eric Cantona did, you know, leaving behind all the problems that he's been carrying on his back? even though the primes that, again, PRS had were nothing to do with the kind of indiscipline that, you know, Cantona had.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, but at the same time, I thought, oh, this is not a lot of money for a player of that quality. I mean, Marseille had spent already 5 million quid on him to get him from Metz. That shows you, yeah, you know, at the time, that was not an insignificant sum. And it showed you that how well thought of he was in France. And but I was, I have to say, a bit dubious. And it's not this his first month in an Arsenal shirt which made me, you know, forget about these doubts.
Yeah.
I was wondering, well, you know, he's a lovely player, but is he really cut out for the Arsenal or for the Premier League?
Yeah.
And the answer came quick enough.
Sure did. You know, I think we have to mention as well that at the time when he joined Arsenal that summer, he had the choice between going to Arsenal or Real Madrid, who were very serious about courting him. And I did an event with Robert a couple of years ago where I asked him about this because he has a Spanish mother and has a real connection to that country as well. You know, what was the thing that made you choose Arsenal over Real Madrid? Like, for me, of course, it's a no-brainer, but as a footballer, you know, Real Madrid, one of the biggest, I mean, I joined Real Madrid to hamper them, of course. Now, it must have been a big decision for him, but he said, you know, he spoke to Arsene Wenger and he spoke to Thierry Henry and Patrick, yes, Vieira, and they all sold him this idea of what Arsenal was and what we kind of wanted to be at that time. It was still very early in Wenger's reign. Everyone was feeling good. We were challenging for the titles, or certainly up there, you know, with Manchester United. This great rivalry was ongoing. And there was a sense that something was building and growing at Arsenal, and he made that decision. So, you know, we're I think grateful for that, that the lure of Spain and the lure of what Wenger was doing was so strong at that time, because at the moment, I'm not sure that would be a decision that would go in our favour. But you talk about his first season. I think in some ways, and I don't know if you would agree, that there is a bit of a myth about, you know, when people say it takes players time to settle into English football, which is true, of course, but they often cite Robert Pires as an example of somebody whose first season was really poor, and I don't think that's the case. I mean, there's the famous story about his first game away at Sunderland, and Arsene Wenger left him on the bench and said, I'm just going to let you watch and see what English football is about, and
yes, that's right,
20 minutes in, he's thinking, uh-oh. Oh, what the hell have I done here?
Sunderland, for goodness sake.
Yeah, exactly, at that stage. But I think there was obviously an adaptation period where it took him a little bit of time to settle in. But he ended that season with 8 goals and 9 assists in all competitions.
Yes.
That's not a bad return for a player in his first season in English football. So I don't think that particular myth stacks up. He might have started slowly, but he really grew into English football pretty quickly.
He did, and in fact, he played a lot as well this season. That season,
51 appearances.
Well, that's a hell of, you know, that's a big number, and which obviously showed what kind of confidence he enjoyed from Wenger.
Yeah,
and also, if I can come back on one thing you said about the influence that Patrick Vieira and Thierry Henry had on his signing for Arsenal rather than for Real Madrid. And there were a couple of other clubs, saying Juve was one other club which was interested in him at the time. I think Thierry's role was absolutely crucial, and in more ways than one. First of all, he was another of those players who came to the Arsenal on the back of a difficult season, shall we say. Remember,
yeah,
when Thierry arrived, you know, after, you know, Juve, the whole shenanigans with his transfer from Monaco to Juve and what happened there, and the fact he barely played, and he played in some very strange positions. Even he played wing back at one point. And so Thierry was able to tell Bobby, you know, you're going to find a manager who is going to play you in your proper position, a manager who understands you. If he signs you, it's because he really loves you. And they were quite close at the time, Thierry and Bobby. I don't think they're as close now as they were then. And Henri was an absolutely crucial element in the integration of Bobby Pires. Absolutely crucial. And I'm not just talking in terms of the way that they dovetailed on the pitch and they built a relationship, which they already had in the French national team. But it's also because Thierry was genuinely the person that Bobby relied on the most at the time when, at the moment, now he speaks about 6 words of English. At the time, he was in the negative.
He's better than that. He's better than that these days.
Well, I exaggerate, but let's put it that way. For somebody who's lived in London for that long, he's not the most fluent of speakers. I will put it that way. Okay. Even though his wife's current wife, I've seen her constantly teasing him and kneeling him, saying, "Robert, you've got to work on your English. Robert, you've got to work on your English." But Thierry was there, first of all, to welcome him and to welcome him in his home. Because Bobby stayed actually for a while with Thierry.
Okay.
And he used to go to Thierry's place and have pasta and things like that. And so Thierry was absolutely vital in securing Bobby to start with, but then afterwards to give him the comfort that he needed in a country whose language he didn't speak, to find himself a home in London. And then he blossomed. But I agree with you, there's this whole thing about, I don't know why, we tend to think that the beginnings of the players in a club are somehow more difficult than they actually were. It's like people say the same thing about Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp was not rubbish when he arrived at Arsenal. Far from it. Thierry Henry was not rubbish when he arrived at Arsenal. They took some time to find their marks, okay, to become the players they became afterwards and true Arsenal greats. But similarly, Bobby actually started to find his marks in that first season, and not in the second one. And particularly in terms of assisting goals. And if you look at his at the season he had, the further you went into that season, you realize, well, the numbers were getting better and better and better. And he was, I think, he finished the season as a definite starter. So that's not too bad,
no,
shall we say, for as an apprenticeship to a league that was so different from anything he'd known before.
Absolutely. And I think, like some of the others, it took him a little while to get off the mark. But when you think about his first goal, which was against Lazio in the Champions League.
That was pretty special, wasn't it?
It was pretty special. And it was kind of like the sort of goal that should have been his first goal for Arsenal. You know, it was a really late equaliser away from home against Lazio, who at that stage were, you know, a big team. If I remember, they had Nesta was playing for them, Pavel Nedved. You know, they had some big, big players. And yeah, his goal was like a precursor to so many of the goals that came following that. It was like, it wasn't an ordinary goal. And I think, actually, one of the beauties of Pires as a player was his ability to score ordinary, scrappy, scruffy goals. Because if a goalkeeper spilled a shot, who was the guy following in? It was Robert Pires. If the ball came back off the post, who was there? Robert Pires. You know, he had an amazing ability to be in the right place in the right time. But that's really not what defines him, even though I think it's a very underrated ability. But some of the goals that he scored were incredible. And I think that goal against Lazio was just a brilliant way to get started.
Yeah. And the other thing as well is that people tend to forget how many of these goals were crucial. Mm. Is that there's also the knack of scoring the goal that makes all the difference, or creating the goal that makes all the difference, which is something that Bobby always had in his game. And because of his personality, because of the fact he's not exactly what you would call, he's not somebody you would want on your side, perhaps in a street brawl, perhaps not. Oh, perhaps yes, actually.
He was. Perhaps,
yes.
He was.
He's a big guy, actually.
He is.
He's 6 foot.
6 foot one.
2.5 or something like that. Yeah. He's 1.87 meters.
And
he's a big lad.
He didn't mind getting involved. You know, once he grew into the team, he didn't mind getting involved. I mean, you remember that bit where he, you know, went to throw the ball back into the crowd at White Hart Lane, and you know, there was the incident with David O'Leary where he said, I think it was something along the lines of, well, I said a few things to him. You know, the first few English words that you learn. So he definitely, look, he's not a bruiser. He's not a Dennis Wise kind of character. But actually, speaking of Dennis Wise, isn't there an amazing picture? I must see if I can find it and put it up on the site when this goes out, where Dennis Wise is sort of squaring up to Pires, and Pires is just looking at him, and it's almost like he's about to backhand him away, like he's an insignificant little oik, which, of course,
yeah,
you know, he was.
Swat him like an irksome gnat.
Yes, exactly. A beautiful way to put it. But, yeah, I've kind of forgotten what the point we were making was in general, but physically...
Well, the fact that he was also somebody who scored important goals or created important goals at important times. And when people thought, again, of him as being perhaps a little bit, not frail, but perhaps not having the kind of inner strength, mental strength, whatever, don't forget, without this guy, Robert Pires, France wouldn't have scored the golden goal against Paraguay in mm-hmm. the World Cup. And France wouldn't have scored the golden goal against Italy in the final of Euro 2000.
Yes.
That's also the kind of player that he was. He was a player who had a real impact in very, very big games, who understood the, and we'll come to that, but the fact that he's got such an astonishing record against Tottenham yes. means that he also got, he got Arsenal very, very quickly. Mm. And that, you know, even though he might be the loveliest man you would possibly hope to meet and a dream of a teammate in terms of his humility and so forth, there's also a streak in him which is much harder than people think.
He also scored the winner in the FA Cup final in 2003, the only goal of,
yeah,
of that particular game.
At the Millennium Stadium, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about the 2001-2002 season. He's had a season in which he's done, I think, and we both agree, he's done well. He's settled in. Arsenal still finished runners-up to Manchester United. But the 2001-2002 season, I think, is the one in which Wenger described Pires as the oil in our engine.
Correct, yes.
15 Premier League assists before he picked up that injury, which we'll talk about. But this was a guy at that period of time who was probably the best in the world in his position, the Pires yes. role. Who could play the Pires role better than Pires himself? And not quite a quirk of fate, but when you think back to that period and you realize that Arsenal had Dennis Bergkamp, who was perhaps in the September of his career, but still an amazing player. Patrick Vieira at his prime. Thierry Henry absolutely coming into his prime. Robert Pires in his prime. Players who any club in the world would have taken from us if they could, and they tried. They definitely tried. You know, for Arsenal, as much as we love it, we sort of we have to accept that in the pantheon of great clubs in Europe, we're not quite at the highest level. So for us mm-hmm. to have those four players in that team at that time with some of the supporting cast was nothing short of incredible. An amazing piece of team building over a number of years by Arsene Wenger.
And in the end, the team, again, I come back to that, it's probably in terms of the quality of the game, the football they played, perhaps my favorite Wenger team of his 22-year yeah. stay at the club. I found the most enchanting. Edu plays a great role in that.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved him, like everybody else, but especially Bobby Pires. And I think it is one of Wenger's greatest regrets that he didn't hear the alarm bells, and they were ringing. He heard them, but he didn't listen to them. And you know, I was doing a little bit of revising Pires before we talked together, and I was convinced, because I was at the game against Newcastle at Highbury,
yeah,
when he was injured in 27th minute, and we immediately knew something very, very wrong had happened. And you know what? I'd completely forgotten it was in the cup. Oh. Because the only thing I remember of that game is Pires going off the ground and thinking, my goodness, not him, not now, please. He's our best player. He's our best player.
Yeah.
And Wenger knew it, that he was the best player. And he was in the red at the time. And Wenger did something that, unfortunately, I think he did on other occasions with some very big players. He played him in the red. And what had to happened. Mm. And then we lost Bobby. We still had a fantastic season.
Well, yeah, we did. Obviously, we did the double.
But
of course, we lost a key player. I mean, I think that was the season as well where when we needed somebody to step up and fill the gap, Freddie Ljungberg did that admirably in that final part of the season. But until then, Pires had absolutely been our best player. A real blow as well, because I can remember at the time when the injury happened, there was some talk that he might put it off and try and play in the World Cup, but ultimately it was deemed too serious and he missed the World Cup. Perhaps
he missed the meltdown.
Yeah, maybe perhaps that wasn't the worst thing in the world for him to miss, even though it's very hard to sell that to a player. And it was interesting. I was doing a little bit of research here, and he talked about the moment when it happened, jumping over Dabby's ass. He said, "My right knee twisted outwards. I tried to pull back and then I heard a crack. I believe the injury was due to mental tiredness and that I was at fault because I was not focused enough." which is interesting because you're talking about him being in the red zone, which is understandable because he played a lot that season. But for the player, I think when you're playing as well as a player played or as well as Pires played that season, you don't feel tired. You don't feel fatigue until things start going badly. And when you're performing every week and you're creating and you're scoring and you're contributing in a really positive way, I don't think maybe you don't recognize the physical signs yourself. Whereas if you're going through a fallow period or the team is struggling, then all of a sudden those legs get heavy.
Yeah, but one person should know that for you is the manager who's got the stopwatch in his hand, who's got all the stats at his disposal, can see how many sprints you're doing, can also see how you're recuperating, your breathing capacity, all these sort of things, and probably much, much more sophisticated things than that, because I'm talking probably about what Herbert Chapman was doing, not Arsene Wenger. But he failed, and I think that the mental fatigue as well was another element. He played literally, how many games did he play that season? You've done your research, but he was a starter in almost every single game. It's only very rarely that he was subbed. It's only very rarely that he was on the bench to start with. And he played and played and played until that moment when, honestly, things became too much and the body had to say, I'm sorry, you've got to stop now, my friend.
Yeah.
And he stopped, and it was not detrimental to Arsenal, perhaps, for those two titles. It certainly was detrimental for the season that came after that.
Yeah.
And it was also, you were talking about the French national team. I know that, you know, his last game for France was in 2004. But in fact, the moment when things started to go wrong were for him coming back from that injury and then having the great luck to fall on Raymond Domenech.
Mm.
You know, you wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No, this is the guy who picks his team based on the astrology charts and all that kind
of
stuff.
And Bobby's a Scorpio, so Scorpios have no place in the French national team. That is clear, absolutely clear.
Of course.
Clear to absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
He played 44 games that season until he got injured, and that was in March. So that'll show you, how much he played. I think one of the most iconic Arsenal moments is the presentation of the Premier League trophy on the pitch at Highbury in 2002. And Pires, who had been crowned Footballer of the Year in England, something he never thought he would be given, but his performances, even though he missed the final part of the season, surely merited that. His teammates getting down on their knees and doing the "We're not worthy" bow. When you look at the players who are honouring Robert Pires in that way, even if it was a way to make him feel involved or to recognise his contribution to that season, it's still amazing to see David Seaman, Tony Adams, guys like that who've been around the block, been there, done that, played with some great players, were absolutely great players themselves, but had no compunction and no hesitation in recognizing what they had in Robert Pires
to bow bow in front of greatness and to bow in front as well of an absolute, as I said, a dream of a teammate and somebody who made the dressing room a very happy place to be, and the training ground a very happy place to be, because there's no time when Bobby has been happier than when he has the ball at his feet. And it can be anywhere. It can be playing with his children, it can be playing with friends five a side in a park. He's done it in London, and it can be especially on the training ground and playing for Arsenal. I think also perhaps they were sensitive to the way that, again, people say he bought into. I don't like this word, actually, buying into, because there's no money involved here. The way he made Arsenal a part of himself from the word go. I think all of this combined to create something very special around him. And as well, you know, the poignancy of, I think, done this wonderful double, knowing exactly who you owe this double to, and at the same time, this person is not here. And, as you say, an iconic image of very, very happy times indeed.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
He came back, I think, if I remember, the following year in a Champions League game, possibly against Valencia. There's a perception.
I think he came back before that.
Did he? Maybe it was.
He came back in the Champions League.
Was it against Auxerre? My apologies. My apologies. But that year, that was a year in which.
I've spared you so much trouble on social networks here.
Well.
No, it was against Auxerre.
Yeah. And I think probably there's a perception that, you know, post cruciate injury and before cruciate injury, you're looking at different players. And I think there was certainly a little bit of an impact on Pires. But that season again, 2002-2003, 17 goals, 15 in the Premier League, an FA Cup final winner. You know, it's not quite as if he picked up exactly where he left off, but it did feel a bit like he was making up for lost time. Again, you know, that was a season in which Arsenal should have won the title also.
Yes, indeed. And I think perhaps the importance of his contribution to the team was because of Thierry Henry's form, which was quite stellar that particular year. It might be one of the reasons why we didn't quite appreciate the quality of his return. As you say, the numbers coming back from a cruciate injury like this are absolutely, ridiculous, basically.
Yeah.
I think there's, seem to remember there was a pretty good game against Spurs in that season.
He did love a goal against Spurs, didn't he?
Yes, he did, didn't he? Mm. I think we should have the stats at our disposal.
I think he scored 8 goals in his career against Tottenham. It's a record he shares with Emmanuel Adebayor also. But
is astonishing to use those two words in the same sentence talking about a record against Spurs.
I know it is. But he did. I mean, look, he got it, and he must have been an absolute thorn in their side. They must have, you know, hated the sight of him, which of course was a wonderful thing. You know, the numbers continued, Philippe, in 2003-2004, the invincible season in which he played a huge part again. 19 goals and 12 assists in 51 appearances for the club that season.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just an amazingly consistent, productive player.
And one thing which is perhaps forgotten about this, the invincible season, as far as he's concerned, up until then, he'd been deployed almost exclusively on the left side of the attack. And this is a season in which Wenger actually used him in different positions. He played as a right midfield. He played as an attacking midfielder. He played, in all sorts of positions, which might not necessarily have been the case before that, and showed his versatility as much as anything else. And he was also superb in the Champions League. I mean, we've forgotten that, perhaps because of that fateful game, which I personally will never forget, and which is like branded in my soul against the return leg against Chelsea.
Yes.
When actually he'd scored the equaliser, he scored the first goal. Mm. In the game against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge, didn't he?
He did. It was a header as well, wasn't it?
Was it a header? My goodness. Bobby heading the ball. That's extraordinary.
He
actually was very good. He scored against Inter. He scored against Celta. He scored against Lokomotiv and so forth. He had also a very good season in the Champions League. And you thought, well, maybe we've got our Bobby back. And again, his numbers were pretty amazing. But at the same time, you felt, this is also when things start to change a little bit, I think, for him. Mm. This season, the tail end of, I wouldn't say he's getting on a bit, but I'm wondering if he, actually coming back from the cruciate, he didn't run on mental energy as well an awful lot, and he still had, those two very good seasons on the back of that. I wouldn't say that was the end of it, because that would be going too far.
Sure.
But these were the last two seasons in which he was really totally himself.
Do you think that was something that was on Wenger's mind, something that he noticed, because, you know, we talk about his contribution in the Invincible season. The following season, 2004-2005, again, he's got 17 goals. You know, maybe not as productive from an assists point of view as he was, but still 17 goals, again, in a season where we didn't win the title. I think that was the first time Chelsea won it. They ran away with it that year, I think. And we get to 2005-2006, and the contribution is slightly smaller, 11 goals, five assists, but a key part of a team which ultimately went through to the Champions League final. You know, having lost Patrick Vieira, Dennis Bergkamp was at the end of his career. We were seeing young players come through like Cesc Fabregas, like Mathieu Flamini was part of the team. You know, the sort of the average age of the team was getting younger. We had this makeshift back four that got us all the way, more or less, to the final.
Philippe Sandros, Mathieu Flamini.
Yeah, Flamini,
Emmanuel Eboué and Colo Touré.
Exactly. You know, it was an amazing achievement even to do that.
But what I should qualify what I was saying.
Okay.
Because what I'm saying is also, I wouldn't say tainted, but perhaps influenced by some of the things that Wenger was, I had been telling me at the time, that he felt that perhaps that Bobby was not quite the player he had been beforehand, and that he was, I think, starting to think beyond that, because he knew also that he had a big job on his hands with the decision to move to the Emirates had been taken. He knew what the financial constraints were going to be. He knew he was going to have to build a team in a different way, that is, around a nucleus of young players who would develop a special kind of understanding, the idea they would stay together and they would do a kind of Ajax kind of thing, I don't know, something of the kind. And I'm wondering if that's why perhaps what I'm saying is a bit tainted by what Wenger was, I wouldn't say confiding, was telling me. And that perhaps he didn't quite have the same, he was not as pivotal as he had been before.
So do you think at that fateful moment in Paris, when Arsène had to make a decision, when Jens Lehmann was sent off in the Champions League final, he looked out on that pitch and he thought, well, if I've got to get through this game with 10 men, I've got to perhaps err on the side of those who are more physically able to do what we need to do against a team like Barcelona, who weren't the Barcelona of today, but still a very, very good side with some amazing players. And it was that preyed on his mind and made him make that decision, which was a heartbreaking decision to have to make, I'm sure, for him and certainly for Pires. As he said afterwards, it was at that moment where he realized, well, his time as a player at Arsenal under Arsene Wenger was basically over.
Absolutely. And but he'd been talking about it beforehand, you know, because he could feel that things were slipping away from him a little bit. You know, his playing time was a bit down. There were occasions on which, you know, he was a sub. And, you know, a few games where you just saw him, he played, you know, I'm looking at his games right now and I'm thinking, oh, he was a sub there. Oh, he was a sub there. He didn't quite have the same status any longer. Even if he still had the efficiency at some points in the season.
Yeah.
And before, I remember sitting down with him before the final against Barcelona, where he was still hesitating as to what was the future would hold for him. Because, as you know, he had offers, I mean, coming all the time.
Yeah.
And it was the moment where he thought, well, maybe I should, you know, this Villarreal the offer is there. And should I take it, should I not take it? And the straw that broke the camel's back, to coin a phrase, was that decision.
Yeah.
I'm not absolutely convinced that, you know, it would have ended as it did had it not been for this decision. But on the other hand, this decision was quite logical in terms of the way that Wenger had seen the role of Robbie Pires evolve, through all these seasons, especially since his injury.
Yeah.
And Yeah, and that's something that he found it very difficult to live through that. And I think all of us found it a little bit difficult to accept. Well, I certainly did. I don't know about you. I mean, you absolutely love the player, as I did. But I felt that it's not quite the right thing that was done by him. I know circumstances, okay, I understand that, but come on.
No, look, I you know, if you'd asked me any day of the week to choose between Robert Pires and Alexander Hebb, it's always going to be Robert Pires, regardless of whether I can see logic in the decision to keep perhaps a more physically able player on the pitch. Yeah. And I think for Pires, it must have been an absolutely awful way to play your final game for the club in your home country, the biggest domestic football game, or the biggest domestic, do you hear me? But the biggest club football game in the world. Everybody's watching, and you last, whatever it is, 18 minutes.
12,
and even if it's
minutes. 12 minutes, I think it was.
Oh, is that what it was? Oh, my God.
Is that 12? Oh, 17, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it felt like the game had barely started.
And, you know, yeah, exactly. And as a player, however much you understand the game and however experienced you are and how you might understand the context of what's happening, to be taken off, to be the one called ashore that early is not a nice feeling at any level of the game for any player. But in the Champions League final, in your home country, in what's potentially your final game for a club that you love and have done so much for, and that you, I'm sure, feel like you can contribute to, even if you're the guy who's not deemed physically the most able, you know, you could do 60 minutes, couldn't you? And they could bring somebody else on, or, you know, you could do 70. They could bring somebody else on for the last 20 to add the legs that you don't necessarily have anymore. It's a really, really heartbreaking way to end your career at a club.
And a little bit as well, you wonder, it was a bit inflexible because it was all to do with this policy of not signing players who were over the age of 30. Do you remember this nonsense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it had to do with that because Pires would probably, I mean, he wanted a two-year deal at the time with Arsenal. He wanted to stay. Mm. And the club basically wouldn't both say, no, it's 1 year and that's that, and if it is a year and so forth. And in the end, he decided, well, so be it. You know, I've got an offer to play in a country I love, and with he knew very well the guys from Villarreal, not just from having played against them in the semi-final, by the way. But he felt really betrayed is perhaps too strong a word because he wouldn't use it himself, but he felt perhaps that his contribution to Arsenal hadn't been valued in the proper way, and it still had an awful lot to offer. Mm. And that even if it was maybe in a different, slightly different role, or perhaps not, but he felt he had slipped down the scale. And I think he slipped down the scale for a while, not just 2005, 2006. I think perhaps it was the attention that Wenger was giving him in training. Maybe it was the way he was talking to him or not talking to him. I don't know. Mm. Maybe he could see as well that Wenger was pursuing a policy with this new Emirates-bound Arsenal, which was different from the Arsenal he discovered in 2000, and that perhaps there was no more room for him. But on the other hand, when you think about, I mean, six seasons is a long time, but it's not, you know, like, well, Pat or like Thierry or Dennis or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the trace is left in the club. In a way, the amount of time he spent there, even if it was significant time, is almost irrelevant. There was something else about him that made also Arsenal one of the most lovable, genuinely lovable teams on the planet.
Yeah.
Because whatever people say about his supposed dive against Portsmouth, which is a thing that they, which is honestly ridiculous. But
yes,
there you go.
I agree with you.
Absolutely ridiculous. Even, you know, the funny penalty routine with Thierry Henry, that certainly has a place in our folklore now. All these sort of things. But the place is he's made for himself in the history of the club, especially considering his last season there, which was a truncated season, which ended very badly. The place is far greater than perhaps the length of his stay, or even his stats would warrant.
Sure.
There is something else about him, something that I think we immediately fell in love with when we saw this guy wearing our colors, and we thought he's the right person. And there's nobody else like Robert Pires.
No, I agree with you. You know, The very first precursor to Arsblog was a website that I set up, and it was called The Church of Bob. And it was all about Robert Pires. And it was Robert Pires as this kind of cult leader that everybody loved him. And I wish I could find it because it was, I think it was quite funny. But thankfully, I sort of expanded the horizons a little bit and it became Arsblog. But that was the first one that I set up. And that was before Arsblog. So that tells you about the connection that I had. And I think, you know, when you look at, okay, the way that it ended was not particularly great, and it took a bit of time for him to get over that, and it took, I think, perhaps a little bit of time for his relationship with Arsene Wenger to mend. It did over time, and then, of course, he became a fixture around the club on the training ground, somebody who was there to keep fit, but also somebody who was able to pass on experience and to mentor some of the young players. And I do remember very distinctly when we played Villarreal in the Champions League, not just the home game, but in the away game, which I was at in Spain, at the end of it, he came over and applauded the away fans, and we all applauded him and sang his song, and it was lovely. It was a really, really nice connection between a player and the fans, because too often players leave and immediately there's sort of bridges burned and people go, well, he left, so, you know, who cares about him? He left and people still cared about him, and they still care about him.
And he still cares about Arsenal.
Yes.
He was telling me not that long ago, actually, that some of the first words that his son Theo spoke, one of the first words was Arsenal. Oh. He was asked, somebody asked Theo his name, and he replied, Theo Arsenal.
Ah,
exactly. Come on, who isn't melted right now?
Exactly. Who's got the heart of stone? The heart of stone out there. Let me just. There's a couple of. I'm just going to ask you maybe about a favorite performance and a favorite goal. But we did talk at the start about how there's more to Robert Pires than Robert Pires the player. There's Robert Pires the person, and you know you can see an amazing footballer, and maybe you don't connect with them because of their personality. Maybe they're so driven, they're just like a footballing robot. And however good they are as a player, you just can't get into them as a person, if you like. And similarly, there might be players who are, you know, have flaws all over the place, but because of who they are, you like them. And I think Pires was a person that almost everybody connected with over his time at the club. And I again, going back to some of the research that we did, this was a diary piece that he wrote in 2002 after he'd sustained the injury, and it was in his recovery time, his recuperation. He hadn't gone to the World Cup, and he talks about, you know, the World Cup and the injury and the doctors and the training and, you know, being sent back to France to do all the rehab, but also about his beliefs as a citizen of France. And this was at the time when Jean-Marie Le Pen was a candidate, perhaps for the French presidency. You will be able to tell me that. And he said, I speak up when I feel the urge to defend the values I believe in. Last May, I openly said I was fighting the National Front, whose candidate qualified for the second round of the presidential election. I should have read on before I asked you that. I publicly gave my support to the moderate conservative candidate, stating that it was inconceivable to have a president coming from the ranks of the extreme right. We French are lucky enough to live in a beautiful country where the word fraternité is part of the official motto. All this would have disappeared had the extreme right won. And he talks about how footballers, they do have a platform in which they can influence people and where they can be seen to say the right things and to defend the values that we all perceive to be the right ones. So no to racism, no to sexism, no to homophobia, equality, you know, liberty, all of these things that you would like to think people take as or what should be the foundations of a good and functioning society. He was willing to speak up about those things in 2002. And we hear all the time, our footballers, they shouldn't say this, they shouldn't say that, they should stay in their lane. You know, who wants to hear from them? You know, you're privileged, you do this, you do that. You know, I think that's a big part of what I really like about Robert Pires is his personality and his desire to speak up for what's right and wrong.
Well, what do I have to add to that, honestly?
I don't know.
I don't know, because I think that you spelled it absolutely wonderfully. And but it stems from his personality, stems from his background, his upbringing. He's the most French of French in many ways, because he's a son of the immigration as well.
Mm.
And in that, he's very much, his family, his name is Portuguese in origin. As you said, his mom was Spanish, is Spanish, but he grew up in the Lorraine, and he's very, very proud of his Lorraine ancestry and so forth. And at the same time, he had a very special link with players within the French team who came from also an immigrant background. And whether immigrant or overseas background, I should say,
okay,
which is two different things. But he always had a capacity, well, a natural-born capacity to enthuse and empathize with people, which is still very much in evidence when you see him today. He does an awful lot of things from which people don't talk about for a number of charities all across the planet, honestly. Is the most, he makes himself available. He finds it very difficult to say no to people, which is one of the reasons why sometimes he runs into problems. And he seems, it's not that he's incapable of seeing bad in people. He can. He can definitely smell a rat and a bullshitter from a long way away. But he's made a conscious decision that, given how privileged he's been to live this life as a professional footballer and to enjoy his life as much, his first reaction towards others should be trust and confidence. Now, there are not many people who do this.
No.
Not many people. In fact, he's one in a million. And you know how Titi nicknamed him when he arrived? He called him L'Ange, the angel. which says an awful lot about the guy. And I don't think you will ever hear anybody say anything wrong about Robert Pires. And if you hear somebody saying wrong about Robert Pires, that person probably has got a big problem.
They're the wrong ones.
And to do that, but he's not all twee and saccharine or anything like that. He's
sure.
Also a guy who comes from where he comes, and he can speak frankly. He can sometimes be he can get unnerved like everybody else. But it's a very rare case of somebody who had the sensitivity and the intelligence to realize from very early on that he'd been given this incredible gift and he could use it to live the kind of life that people dream about, and who is constantly reminding himself, this is how lucky I am. This is how lucky I am.
Mm.
And which is one of the reasons why he wanted to carry on playing for so long. And you found him, playing for Goa in the Indian Premier League or whatever it was. Just, this was not because of the money. It was simply because he's fitter than most 20-year-olds. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And all of this, these are things that, I believe that when you watch a player on the pitch, you understand his personality perhaps better than you spend an afternoon, an evening, or perhaps a fortnight on holiday with them, because this is where the true person shines. And you could feel that on the pitch with Robert Pires. You could feel the talent, you could feel the pleasure, the sense of joy, the togetherness that he appreciated in football, his rapport with the fans, which you've talked about, even if his English was not the best, and all of this combined to create a very, very special player indeed. And again, one, I think he was voted in the top 10 players, all-time players of Arsenal Football Club. I'm sure if you looked at the stats and perhaps the objective role that players, great players from the past have played in, winning another double, winning trophies and so on, perhaps some others you would have thought would have been above him. But no, I think instinctively as fans, we understand the nature of the link, the depth of the link that we have with a particular player. And he's one of those very rare for whom, there is this immense affection,
yeah,
born out of his performances, but also the way he conducted himself and the way that in which he became truly an Arsenal man,
yeah,
even though he was born in Metz, even though he came from Marseille. No problem. Within a few months, within a couple of seasons, he had become an Arsenal man. That is priceless.
Absolutely. And I just looked that up. He is number 6 as voted for by Arsenal fans on the Arsenal website. Not bad. The five players ahead of him, I don't know if you might have heard of these guys, Patrick Vieira, Ian Wright, Tony Adams, Dennis Bergkamp, and Thierry Henry, whoever he is. So, I think that really is a testament to how much The Arsenal fans loved him, loved what he did, and loved that he got it. You know, there are some players who you just know get it when they come to a club, and he was one of those. A couple of very quick ones just to finish off. Have you got a favourite goal?
I was going to say, I mean, I'm not going to be very original, but I think the one against Villa was a little bit special.
Yes.
That shot from outside at an angle of about 45 degrees from the angle of the box. And also, I think his celebration was absolutely wonderful. It's like, yeah, I can do that too, guys. That's just wonderful. But that's not my favorite Robert Pires moment.
Okay, well, I'll tell you my favorite Robert Pires goal, and then you
can tell me
your favorite moment. It's the one against Southampton in that game where he scored a hat-trick and Jermaine Pennant scored a hat-trick, and I think we just lost the title in the game before, and it was the final game of the 2002-2003 season, and the ball just broke, and he just took it first time and lobbed it over the goalkeeper from just inside the opposition half. I know he scored more important goals than that, perhaps better goals technically than that, but it just summed up everything about him as a player. It was just like, oh, there it is, look what I can do, woo! And just again amazing. And it was the what's the word, I'm gonna mangle a French word here, Philippe, and you can tell me, the insouciance. Is that
insouciance?
Okay, that,
which is a kind of, I don't know, carefreeness.
Yes, exactly. It was just like, look, I can do this. And it was, you know, amazing. Tell me your favorite Robert Pires moment then.
The tackle on Patrick Vieira. We draw 0-0 at Stadio delle Alpi. Yes. Ugliest stadium in the planet.
Yeah.
And he tackles his mate. And Titi gets the ball. Fabregas, 1-0. We're on our way.
It was like a changing of the guard almost, wasn't it? The fact that it was Pires, probably the only sly tackle he ever made in his career at Arsenal.
I think he did another one. I think he did another one on Claude Makélélé against Chelsea in a game we won against Chelsea when we won in the league in 2003-2004.
Okay.
I seem to remember, he enables Patrick to go one-on-one with the keeper, with Cudicini then at the time.
Right.
And it was a Robert Pires tackle.
Okay.
On Makélélé. You tackle Makélélé, you tackle Vieira. Come on, it doesn't get better than
that. Well, that's it. You just pick your moments. There's no point tackling these like half-wits. If you're going to tackle someone good. Save it all up for those ones. I'll tell you my favorite moment just before we go, because we're going to have to wrap this up. The game against Liverpool, away from home, I think Paul Durkin, the referee, had sent off Giovanni van Bronckhorst. We were down to 10 men. And Pires picked up the ball, maybe just outside the area, and he did that little duck shuffle that he does. He pushed the ball one way, pushed it immediately back the other way. Steven Gerrard had no idea what was happening. Pires crossed to the near post. Who's arriving? Freddie Ljungberg. Bang, goal. Arsenal win that game. I just love that moment because the skill is so simple. He kind of repeated it against Tottenham in maybe that crazy game, the 5-4 game.
Oh, the 5-4 game, yeah.
Again, it was that little quick shuffle between the feet and he scored the goal. Just fantastic. Well, look, Philippe, it has been a pleasure taking this trip down memory lane and talking about Robert Pires with you. Thank you very much indeed for being here. I hope you've enjoyed it too. It's nice, isn't it?
It's lovely to talk about things that you love. Is there anything better?
No, I don't think so. We do too much talking about stuff that we don't love these days. So it's nice to get the opportunity to have a lovely conversation about something amazing. Philippe, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, everybody.
Hope you've enjoyed this show. We'll be back with another episode of The Players here on Arseblog Patreon. Thank you as ever for your support. We really do appreciate it. And until the next one, cheers. Bye bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.